Hello, and welcome to another episode of Artifacts. If you are new to this podcast, I am your host, Rachel Wilson. My goal is to provide listeners with a brief blast of history and/or science that offers background information and answers questions I had about the topic. It's my hope that listening stirs up great conversation for kids, families, and adults too. I also hope listening motivates you to chase after what you are curious about. If you would like to leave me comments, ask a question, or have an idea of a topic you would like to hear about, feel free to drop me a line at artifactspodcast@gmail.com. For more information about this episode, including a list of sources, please visit artifactspodcasthome.wordpress.com. You've probably heard the proverb, many hands make light work, and that's definitely how I feel about gardening here in the Midwest. It has been a challenge this year to get my garden in. My husband and I have had a garden in our backyard for several years now. This is probably the latest we've gotten our garden in due to the crazy temperatures we've had and the amount of rain that we've had lately. But the few times that I have gotten out there have got me thinking about this week's artifact, the Victory Garden. The Victory Garden takes us back to World War I and World War II. It was also called a war garden. And in these gardens, vegetables, fruit, and herbs were grown in private yards and empty lots, in businesses, and on schoolyards. It was a way for all citizens to contribute to the war effort. And it really boosted morale during both World War I and World War II. There was concern about a shortage or a scarcity of canned goods during World War I. In fact, I did do some primary source searching and I read The War Garden Victorious, and in there the author describes the reason for the food shortage in 1917 was that millions of men around the globe who would have been working in the fields for the season were actually off to war. So our government, the U.S. government, came up with this idea that if people could rely more on their local food, they didn't have to get in the car to go to the store to buy the food, and they didn't need to rely as much on canned food. So instead, that food could be shipped overseas to help with soldiers, both our own but also our allies. As time went on, the movement gained traction through word of mouth and women's clubs, chambers of commerce, and civic associations. Also, the Federal Bureau of Education got on board by starting a U.S. school garden army called the USSGA that enlisted children as soldiers of the soil. So schools were planting gardens on their schoolyard grounds. The Milwaukee Agriculture Commission gave 11,000 packets of seeds, 9,000 tomato plants, and 14 bushels of potatoes. There were 3 million new garden plots planted in 1917 and 5.2 million in 1918. In the following years, canned goods weren't on the list of rationed foods anymore, and so fewer and fewer people were maintaining their Victory Gardens. It wasn't until there became a new need and a new scarcity in World War II that the Victory Garden was revived. In World War II, communities once again had to work together because food needed to be sent to soldiers. Trains and trucks that were used to transport food around the country were needed to transport soldiers and equipment. Citizens at home in the U.S. were given coupon books to purchase food. Food rationing began in the spring of 1942, and it was a way to keep people from becoming outraged by the shortage or scarcity of some common items. It also ensured everyone had a fair share to quality foods and goods. Red stamps in these books covered meat, butter, fats, oils, and sometimes cheese. Blue stamps covered goods, canned goods, frozen fruits and vegetables, beans, processed foods like ketchup, soup, and even baby food. Each stamp gave the holder approval to purchase an item along with money. Quick before we move on, I want to explain how this coupon rationing worked. So every citizen was given a World War II ration book. And in that book, there were stamps and a person had a certain number of stamps that they could use for a month. Once they'd used up all the stamps in the book, they couldn't buy any more of that type of food. So it's different than the way that we think of coupons today. Today, you will often see coupons in flyers or inserts in the newspaper or in magazines or even on products themselves or on the shelves of grocery stores, and they're offering you 50 cents off an item or buy one, get one free or a dollar off. That's not how this worked. You were going to pay full price for the item at the grocery store, but in order to have the authority to buy a blue or a red category food, you had to have the corresponding stamp to go with it. So it meant that you really had to plan out your meals pretty carefully, and you couldn't waste food because the end of the month would come, and I can imagine that people were running out of stamps by the end of the month. This had nothing to do with welfare. It was everybody, every citizen, no matter what class of citizen you were at the time, you were going to have this ration book. So that's what I mean by offering a fair share. It didn't matter if you were really wealthy, it didn't matter if you were poor, because everybody was getting the same number of coupons. And as I looked closer at how this couponing worked, it was really kind of confusing. And my mind was put at ease when I read on the National World War II Museum website that many Americans were confused about how the process worked, even at the time in 1943. From 1943 to 1945, really until the end of World War II, Victory Gardens were heavily promoted and supported by the US government. Once the war was over, we didn't really hear much more about the Victory Garden. And so I was wondering how many Victory Gardens are left from the World War II era. And from what I could find, only two. One, the Fenway Victory Gardens in Boston, and the second, the Dowling Community Garden in Minneapolis, Minnesota. When I was reading over the community garden in Minneapolis, they were talking about how that garden has changed over time to meet the needs of its community. And that got me thinking about how we may not have Victory Gardens today, but we absolutely have community gardens where people are relying on their local foods and people are cooperating and working together in a garden to provide quality, fresh foods. In fact, there's one that I pass almost every day on my way to work, and I was very thankful that Max Dotson over at Caritas had a few minutes to spend with me explaining how the community garden at Caritas works. Hi, Max. Please tell me what your role is here at Caritas.
Well, I'm the executive director here at Caritas, and Caritas is what I consider the cornerstone food pantry here in our Beloit community.
How many people do you serve here?
Currently, we are serving about 2,000 people a month, which breaks down to about 700 to 800 households a month. And we do that year round.
Wow, that's a lot of people. That's more than I would expect, actually. So this community, you're saying not just Beloit, but you're saying the greater Beloit area.
Yes, and that includes Northern Winnebago County, which is in Illinois, and Southern Rock County. We go as far east as Clinton and Sharon, as far east as Broadhead and Orfordville, as far east or south as the northern sections of Loves Park, and as far north as Southern Janesville.
So I noticed the gardens out here because, as I told you, when I drive to work, I see them all the time on my way to school. And I want to know more about how the community gardens here at Caritas work. Can you explain that to me?
Well, a little history. I've only been here since January of 18. The gardens have been here for almost 10 years now. And it was the vision of one of the volunteers when they originally started. And when what you see today out there are 40 plant beds. Just a year ago, there was only 30. But one of the community organizations here, the Evening Lions Club, built 10 new plant beds for us this year on one Saturday morning. And even fill them with dirt. They just completely took over that whole operation and expanded our activity by 25%. So that was pretty amazing. Our community gardens started out not as plant beds, but just as spaces that were rototilled out there. Today, we've got those plant beds. They are 4 by 10 feet in size, and we currently have 25 neighbors, and neighbors are people who come and receive our services. 25 of our neighbors have decided that they want to grow their own produce for the summer, vegetables. And in doing so, they made a commitment. They purchased one plant bed for $5. We have a couple that have bought more than one for the season. And at the end of the season, they clean out that plant bed. They get the $5 back. So it's an investment in themselves. What that does, and we've had a number of people who this year is their first time growing a garden, but they've watched other people grow their gardens. And it's just been that opportunity that we've created for people to take control of their own food. They're growing plants, they're growing vegetables out there for the season. You know, and that's not a quick fix. You have to tend that garden. You have to take care of that garden. You have to be a good steward. There's weeding, there's watering when we're not having downpours.
Right.
There's watering. There's all kinds of things that you need to do to take care of that. And it's the garden community is becoming a community with its own identity here at Caritas as well, because the veterans are helping out the newbies. We here at Caritas, we provide a certain number of plants and seeds, but many people will bring their own, and they share. It's a sharing of this experience. Once the growing season hits, once they start picking the vegetables from their own gardens, they often have a surplus that they didn't expect. They share that with Caritas. They give us the opportunity to have fresh produce in the pantry that they have grown in their own gardens, in addition to taking what they need.
Thank you so much for your time today, Max. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
If you would like more information about Caritas and the Caritas Community Gardens, please visit my website, artifactspodcasthome.wordpress.com, for a link to the Caritas website. I hope you have a safe Independence Day holiday with friends and family. Thank you for listening.